welcome to 2018. Welcome to the earmark.
Oh!
It's the takeoff from the government shutdown. Earmark.
Very good. I was wondering where you were going to go with that.
Yes, earmark. That took a lot of creativity on my part. So, thinking about what has happened over the last few weeks since we last met, of course, the big news for the last few days over the weekend has been the government shutdown. And one of the things that I was struck by is, as a pretty frequent consumer of news, it took me a long time to sort out and untangle why we shut down and who created the shutdown, not in terms of parties, but in terms of the Senate, the House? Like, how did we get to this particular point for the actual shutdown? And it seemed to me that there were lots of blunders by the White House not being organized. And I saw some stuff on Twitter that said that because the vice president was in the Middle East, that actually that was one of the openings that he often plays the role as being the one that can really lay out a strategy for the president. And because he wasn't there, suddenly they were with the JV team. And this was perhaps one of the weaknesses of the White House. But the latest news is that they just voted to reopen the government for, I think, maybe a few days.
A week?
Yeah.
It's great. The whole federal government now lives paycheck to paycheck.
And it's this tiny government, right? Isn't it insignificant?
This is incredible. It's sort of like, okay, so we've spoken about this before. The world's credit pyramid, right, what the global monetary system is based upon treasury bills, which are based upon this thing called the full faith and credit of the United States. Yeah. How do you think it looks to everybody who's sitting there holding these bits of paper that we can't even agree on what we should spend the basics of money on to run a government? And we fund it week by week. A pox on both their houses. I don't care whether you're doing it because you think it's outrageous to hold the Dreamers hostage. I agree. I don't care if you're doing it on the other side because you know if you capitulate on Dreamers, then your whole idea of immigration reform goes up in smoke. I don't care. Just fund the government. I pay taxes. Do it.
My question is to the world out there is, when did funding the government get tied up? And now I'm not speaking directly about DACA, but get tied up in the political process. Like, when did that become politicized? And I mean, of course, we can pull the string and, you know, sort that out. But it has become such a weapon. And
I'm in charge. Oh, I don't have the votes. All right. Well, I'm going to ram it through in the middle of the night. Yes. And if you don't like it, then you can always shut it down when we have to do an appropriations bill.
Yeah.
That's basically what politics has become.
And again, to your point, a $17 trillion budget is at the whim of the leaders to say, oh, we're not going to play with this.
Yeah, $17 trillion economy. So let's say tax and spend a third of that. So basically $5.4 trillion, I think, is probably the ballpark numbers, right? Let's just give this to a bunch of idiots that can't even basically compromise enough to keep hundreds of thousands of working families who work for the government in the paycheck to paycheck mode.
Yeah.
And let's actually try and restore some credibility to the governance of this country.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. It's the credibility point. It just seems to be, people seem to kind of shrug at that and think that that's not a big deal at all.
Well, I mean, in a sense, it's not a big deal in that it's not as if the whole world's going to dump all their treasury bills just because the place is run by incompetence. But if the place is run by incompetence permanently, they will eventually lose faith in those T-bills. And that's when it really begins to hurt. So let's stop screwing up.
Yeah. I mean, this is, to my point of view, this is a super lame government shutdown because it lasted 2.5 days. I mean, I'm glad it's over.
Give it a chance. No. It's over now. We could be down again on Friday.
That's a good point.
Let's
February 9th, another shutdown.
Exactly. So what else has been going on?
Oprah at the Golden Globes.
Ah! Oh my God.
Yes. Oprah 2020 was all.
So Karen, what would be the platform? What would the Democrats run on with Oprah? What would it be?
I thought about this very superficially, but of course it's the celebrity part of things. I mean, I think it would be simply that we have a candidate who's a woman of color and can beat the pants off your
angry old white
word.
Dude.
Yes.
Who's also
yes.
a celebrity.
Yes.
Right. Wow. So what about things like actual policies to benefit people, like reducing inequality, increasing wages, trying to, like, you know, do something about mountains of college debt? Do we just give up on that stuff and just go, my celebrity is better than your celebrity?
Well, we've given up on it. We have for so long. I mean, that word, even policy, I think people start to fall asleep.
Politics. How about actual politics as opposed to celebrity?
Yes. Yeah. This buzzwords.
If we go down, if we go down this road as a country, where basically we become Brazil, right? It's my soap star versus your soap star. Well, you know where that's going to end up, and it's not on a Macarena.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about Oprah that's interesting is that is that so many people in the, you know, in the online communities were so excited about her because she gave the speech, and the and it has now become what is seemingly the benchmark that any Democrat who runs will have to give that sort of speech. And you think, but the speech was just saying that women should have a voice, women should be empowered. It didn't seem like it was that new of a new content.
So the Democrats seem to be pushing certain things towards the base because it seems to work. One is a politics of sexual identity and gender identity. And the other one is that anybody who doesn't think like them is a racist.
Yes.
Now, how many percentage points did Senator Clinton lose all men by last time?
Like a million.
12.
Yeah.
I don't see that as a winning strategy.
Well, I mean, this goes to a running theme with us that we've talked about in terms of the in terms of disaffected voters as well. Is and I think this in a substantive way that getting at 65-year-old or 55-year-old or just getting at the male voter, the sort of average male voter, I think those male voters have to be feeling really displaced in so many different ways, because I think the atmosphere has really made it so. That is so black and white in terms of you're racist or now you're a sexual predator in some way. And I think that's...
Or both. You know, yes, in some people's eyes, you could be both. Just by showing up. Yeah. Not a winning combination for building a majority coalition.
Yeah. And this is a memo to the Democratic Party. If you're interested in winning the White House, maybe to try to not cut off that part of your voting block,
which is half the population.
Seemingly, you need
might go somewhere towards it. Yeah. But no, you know, they never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity.
Oh, so that is totally right.
What's been going on?
The North Koreans are sending a women's hockey team to the South.
And K-pop, or we should say NK-pop.
And I mean, can the Olympics bring us together?
Well, it's interesting. So there's a play here, which I think is fascinating. So apparently, the sort of the North Korea people in the White House, they do have some, are this offshoot of people who think that the long-term game for North Korea here is reunification. Now, here's the interesting thing. I don't know if we spoke about this before, but apparently, you know the mountain that Kim Il Twinkie's family comes from, and every time one of them dies, it volcano erupts or something like this, right? It's in the middle of this province, which is on the border with China. And the majority of that whole province in China is ethnically Korean.
Yes.
So imagine if you're China, the thought of a unified, reunified, and expanded Korea, not a good idea. So you can see why they'd be rather nervous about this, never mind the American reaction. And it seems that maybe the people in the White House were onto something here, because the game seems to be annoy the Americans so much that basically the South Koreans will do whatever we want. And that gives them tremendous leverage over where this whole thing goes over the long term. So maybe there's something in this after all.
So that the North Koreans would, with an eye towards reunification, and suddenly the Chinese think, oh, we don't actually.
Yeah, well, you know, they've got pressures on both sides, right? Yeah. So basically, you know, it seems that Kim Il Twinkie once again is playing a blinder.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not actually going to nuke San Francisco. It's not going to happen, right? Because you would become a parking lot. But if you keep saying it loud enough, you scare all your neighbors enough that you get a lot of leverage, more than you do, and you're not just isolated in your own tin pot little dictatorship.
Well, and he's maybe more strategic than people may have thought.
Yeah.
That he, I mean, using the Olympics in the way that he has the language, like he's maybe not just like some Hollywood or some celebrity-obsessed, you know, K-pop dictator.
Apparently, he hasn't left the country in years.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Interesting. His brother did, but that didn't end well.
Is that the one that he put the rabid dogs on?
No, that was the one where they killed him with nerve gas in an airport.
Oh, yeah, that's right, with the two women.
The two women, yeah.
Yes.
And like one, it was a binary agent, so you had to get both cloths on the face.
Yes.
Mental.
That was very scary. So I don't know about your past, Blythe, but the President of the United States has a history with porn stars that has gotten a little bit of traction in the news. And of course, thinking about this in terms of how it is that Donald Trump is able to have this stuff just roll off his political back.
I think here's, you know, the thing about you sell your soul to the devil and then in this lifetime you get whatever you want, but then the devil gets you. I think something else is going on. I think Trump has negatives of Satan. Right? So that basically he has Satan over a barrel. Because imagine the following. Someone comes out with a reasonably credible-ish story that there was something going on with the porn star. We know there's a non-disclosure agreement, and then there's a vehement denial from the person who's involved. Then two others come up and go, well, actually, there was more to it than that. Imagine if this had been Obama. Oh my God, it'd be like, how is Michelle coping with this devastating news, right?
But Paul Ryan would have been impeached that day, afternoon.
Absolutely, which impeachment on the spot, right? Yeah. This one, it doesn't even register. It's incredible. He has Satan, he's got pictures of Satan doing something really bad. That's what I've got to with this
but
one.
On the other side of the aisle, if it had been George W. Bush, the Democrats would have immediately gone
absolutely.
So I mean, you're right. He has something on the devil.
He's got something exactly, and all the Democrats and everyone, possibly you as well.
But it's just unbelievable that the media hasn't, given that we love sensationalized news, that this hasn't been something more.
But there's something weird about the way in which he's managed to sort of like portray himself as not just Teflon-ish, but more sort of like skank-proof. And there's this sort of like, you know, there's a kind of, I would not be surprised by this, therefore it's not news, because it's him. Whereas if it's somebody else who tries to be not that, then of course that would be a scandal. So there's something in that.
I do wonder if it's that our ability to be aghast or our ability to be surprised by this president is so low now. You're right, that it's just like, it's the third. There's probably 10 more porn stars.
Imagine in about 6 months' time, it's like, oh, who knew he was in league with aliens from planet Grebulon?
Exactly, right.
I mean, come on. He didn't see that coming. That was fake news, right?
Yeah, he's the leader of the Illuminati. I mean, there will be no surprise whatsoever.
Beyonce was trying to tell us that.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Did you read Fire and Fury over the holiday?
No, no one's read it. Everybody read the excerpts, knowing full
that's
well
totally
that
true.
Seven days later, everyone would be like, move on.
I think the Amazon numbers showed, you know, people who downloaded, they only got through like the first 10 pages or something and then stopped reading.
That's brilliant. So I'll give you an even better than that, right? There's a guy called Randall Hansen, who's a professor in Toronto, and he wrote a book in, I think it's 2006, called Fire and Fury, about the Allied bombing campaign over Germany.
Right.
And apparently his book basically hit 3 bestseller lists because people don't bother to check the author's name.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Randy's made a ton of cash, which I hope he's done to refi his apartment in Berlin, because I actually know the guy.
Good for him.
Absolutely. So what I'm doing now, I'm going to actually do, my next book's going to be called The Bible.
Okay.
And then I was thinking something like, you know, Das Kapital, maybe go there, just try and get some
maybe
name
like
recognition.
All lowercase letters this time.
Yeah, exactly. Something like, so, an E. Cummings version of it or something.
That's a really good strategy. That's a great strategy. A couple of things, sort of year-end stuff, was that it was the hottest year on record.
Is why the word climate change and any of its cognates have been stripped from all federal documents.
This may connect to your devil thesis with Donald Trump too, is that there's something that hell is hot.
Something like that. But there's a wonderful kind of like nominalism in this. So like, if you name a thing, then it's true or not true. But if you don't name it, it's not. So I think it was Bannon came up with the original thing. We'll speak about Bannon in a minute. But the idea was, this is how you control the agenda. It's alt, control, delete. You alter the context. You change. You challenge how it's framed, and then you just delete it. And we're successfully with climate change moving in the delete phase. The problem is this: nature doesn't give a damn. Right? You go, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's not happening.
Yeah.
The Brits have a story of a king called King Canute. You ever heard about this guy?
No.
And he basically decided he was the most powerful king of Wessex or something less than 800 and frozen to death. And he was challenged to hold back the tides. So they dumped him down on the flats and put him in the chair, and he's held back the tide. And of course, he drowned. You know, and that's basically what we're doing. It's a King Canute climate strategy.
So, well, this is interesting, because I guess if we just, like you said, just paper over it, or not even, we just delete it.
Yeah, then, just delete it. We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And given the fact that everyone is like over 70 that's running all over the country anyway, and they just want to go back to the 1980s, by the time that they're dead, right, everybody else will have to bear the consequences of their decisions, but they won't. So who gives a damn? That's it. Exactly.
Discounted effect. What's happening in Germany? I've been trying to keep up with. Is there a government? There's
nothing is going on. Everything is in order. But we don't have a government. It's quite funny, actually, because, you know, you can imagine Belgium not having a government, right? So here's a little bit of trivia. At the height of the Greek debt crisis and the European debt crisis in 2010 through 2012, Belgium was way up there. Its debt to GDP ratio was like 120. Yeah, no, 120%, right? And there was no Belgian crisis, right? There was no structural reform for Belgium. You know why? They didn't have a government. So there, for 18 months. So there was no one for the EU to grab hold of and say, right, you will now screw the budget, right?
Yeah.
So basically, everybody kind of forgot about them and it was fine, right? There's a lot of information in that, right? And now, you know, we're back to this position whereby like Germany doesn't have a government effectively. Yeah. And there's something deeply unnerving about that, not just for Europe in general, but for the Germans in particular. Mm-hmm. They need a government. I guess that means that Fred Flintstone's coming to dinner.
I guess it doesn't matter that Germany doesn't have a government.
No. So this is our new thing. What we're going to do is we're going to have a nice little noise every week that's going to tell us it's time for us to wrap up our 15 minutes. And that was it. That was Fred Flintstone's coming for dinner. I've got the Brontosaurus steaks going on in the oven. And,
I see Betty
there
showing
we go.
Up. Well, this is a good .. because it sounds like this is going to hang out there for God knows how long.
I think in 2 weeks' time we can safely reconvene with more fire and fury and more shutdowns. And more general idiocy that we can have a laugh at while climate change slowly bakes all of us.
Belgium people will still not.
Belgium will still have waffles and huge day. Exactly.
Okay, great. We'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.